This is Terry Crosby. Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Thank you for joining us, listeners, again. It's me, and we have a guest in the studio. This week, Andy is actually in Ireland doing some PhD work there, and Steve is under the weather this week, so it's just me, and I brought in a guest to have some discussion. So in studio, we have John Rendall.
Hey, guys.
And he's been here once before, probably about a year and a half ago or something like that. How's it going, man?
It's going really good. Yeah, I am excited to be here. Saw that Andy's eating some Lucky Charms in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's getting the full Irish experience, I guess.
So where are you at still? Are you, what are you doing these days?
I'm living in Surrey right now and working as a youth director at a church there. And then I am studying at Axe Seminary, doing the Masters of Christian Studies program with a focus on apologetics. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Shout out to Paul Chamberlain.
Here. Yeah. Took a class with Paul. He's okay, awesome.
What was that one?
Apologetics in a Postmodern World. Okay. I think that's what it was called.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I think we'll have a few more classes in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just doing part-time right now.
Yeah, I took that one. I remember that one. You have kids?
I do, yeah. I have one son currently. He is 2.5, and then my wife is expecting this December, so...
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, our house is going to be busy,
yeah,
but it's lots of fun.
Nice.
And there's toys everywhere, but, you know, that's how it is, so...
So what do you do for fun?
Well, with my son, we build a lot of Hot Wheels tracks right now, but...
Oh, cool. Very cool.
After he goes to bed, I watch a lot of movies, which pertains to this podcast. Well, not as many as I used to, but I like to catch the occasional movie.
Awesome. Awesome. Great to have you back here again, for sure. So John and I saw a movie this week, and we are going to discuss...
A movie called Joker. It's about Joker from Batman, but without Batman in it. And so it's kind of his origin story. It's directed by Todd Phillips, who's best known for comedies like The Hangover. So this is not his usual thing. Yeah, the whole DC Comics movies have been struggling in recent years. There's been quite a few misses and then a few hits. And so they're kind of willing to take a chance on anything, I think, right now. And so that's where I think the idea for Joker came from.
Yeah. We want to give you a spoiler alert right now. We are going to discuss the movie pretty much in depth.
Mm.
So if you haven't seen it and want to see it, then you might want to stop it right now and, you know, move on to something else and then save come back
this,
to it.
Yeah. Save it for later.
Save it for later.
When you're trying to unpack what you just saw.
There we go. So, I mean, this is an iconic supervillain, mm-hmm. right?
Probably the most well-known.
Well-known.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going back 79 years.
Yeah.
It was first created in 1940, I think. It was in one of the first comics. And what I learned is that he was supposed to be cut out of the whole thing after the first comic book.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. And now, 79 years later, he's still here.
Mm-hmm.
Iconic. So, yeah, I mean, when it first, was in the pages of the comic, he was almost like a goofy prankster at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we go along in years and years past the 70s, it just seems to get darker and darker as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we both recognize that in the movie, how dark it did get.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I remember. Do you have childhood experiences? Did you like read a lot of comics?
Yeah, that's a good question, Terry. When I was growing up in the 90s, I actually thought that comics were over. I thought that was kind of an 80s thing. I didn't even know that they still made comic books. Except for like Archie comics because I see them at a grocery store. But I grew up in a small town, so I never saw real comic books. And so I never grew up reading comic books. But
no.
I watched Batman the Animated Series, which was the 1990s Batman show that was really popular.
Did you find it dark at that time?
Yeah, I think I did think it was dark. I was watching the TV show, which is about, you know, the 22-minute episodes. They did come out with a theatrical movie called Batman Mask of the Phantasm. I would recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's really good. But yeah, it was dark at the time.
Well, this movie Joker has done really well already. Okay.
Yeah.
So There was a premiere at the Venice International Film Festival on August 31st, and it won the Golden Lion. That's the top award at that festival. This past weekend was its opening weekend, highest October showing ever, $96.2 million, and worldwide, $272 million.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people going out and seeing this movie. So what are your first thoughts about the movie?
I will just maybe intro by saying that I had pretty high expectations of this movie because there was so much buzz. Why is this movie winning film festivals and why are people giving it, you know, 10 out of 10s and all that kind of stuff? And I think I was looking for something a lot deeper than what the movie came up with. I think that visually this is a very beautiful movie. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. One commenter said, any scene from the movie could be a poster. The way that they use slow motion and just the cinematography and everything is just really well done. But I think behind the visuals of this movie, there's not a lot there. That would be kind of my opinion. And I'm still kind of searching for, is there something I missed? Is there some sort of deep philosophical question that I overlooked? Or is it really, you know, what it was or what it was presented to be. And maybe that's part of the of the allure of the movie and, you know, getting into big spoilers, but kind of how the movie ends, ask some of those questions. So what was your initial take on the movie?
I don't think I went in with high expectations. I honestly didn't see any trailers beforehand. I thought there were some very good points being made in some aspects, and we can get into that in a little bit, which really gave a good focus. I don't think philosophically there was much to it, but there were some other aspects that it highlighted. And I appreciated that. And I think from where I am right now and what I've been dealing with in the last years, I think that's why I was so sensitive to that portion of the movie. Mm-hmm. So there was that where, you know, I came from this comic book era, you know, I honestly liked the movie. Not sure if I should say that.
No, you can say that. Yeah, no. This is a safe space.
This is a safe space. Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure after it gets sent out.
You know what? We're all about disagreeing love.
Yeah.
So still being able to have a civil conversation.
I really did enjoy it for the most part. After leaving the movie, you feel very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And to this point right now, while we're talking, I'm still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
With that movie. So I think it did its job.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very unsettling movie. So to give a massive spoiler, I think one of the biggest problems I had with the movie is at the end of the movie, well, so Arthur Fleck, he's the character that we're following, and he's lives a hard life, a difficult life, and you start to see early on that he's not a very aware person. He doesn't have a super solid grasp on what's going on around him. And developmentally, I would almost say he's very childish. So we get this scene at the beginning where he has this sort of fantasy that he goes on his favorite talk show's host, and the talk show host and everybody in the audience loves him and brings him down on the stage and just gives him all this, I don't know what you want to call it, congratulations for who he is basically as a person. And basically the talk show host says to him, you know, I wish I had a son like you. I would trade all this for a son like you. So, you know, he's sort of, I don't know, we never really learned how old he was. He looked like he could have been at least in his 40s. And so this kind of 40-year-old man fantasizing that he would be on this talk show and that the talk show host would want to be his surrogate dad and all that kind of stuff. And so you get a picture early on that he has these sort of delusions and that he's somewhat childish. After that, everything in his life starts to sort of fall apart.
Yeah.
And everyone is very cruel to him. Almost everyone. I can only think of two characters, his friend who's a dwarf and his neighbor who lives down the hall are the only two people that are, you know, remotely friendly to him. Or at least not cruel to him.
I just want to say also, I really felt that he was a nice guy. Like at the beginning of the movie, I think you get that idea that he is really trying to make people's lives better. He's a clown. You know, he interacts with people on the street. You see, you know, takes where he's on the street and he's just having a great time. And I really thought you got that idea that he was ultimately a nice guy, you know, trying to do something good.
A lot about this movie is perspective, in my opinion. And so I'll just, here's the massive spoiler. At the end of the movie, we find out that he's in an insane asylum and he's in a straitjacket. And it kind of leaves you with this question of, is any of this real? Did any of it happen? Yes. Maybe some of it did happen, but it's his perspective on how things happen. So we don't really get the truth ever, it feels like.
And well, some there are people, some episodes or parts of it that weren't real, right? You learn that.
Well, I would just say at the end, I think it's left ambiguous, you know? I mean, right. we learned some things that didn't happen,
right.
for sure, but we don't know what did happen.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the questions that you're left with at the end of the film. And so you're seeing everything from his perspective. And so my questions coming out of the film were people really that cruel to him, or is that just the way he saw it? And is he a nice guy, or is that just the way he sees himself? And so, you know, we get some hints that maybe he's not a nice guy early on and some stuff that he does and stuff. And he sees himself as the victim and the hero at the same time. And yeah, it brings up a lot of these questions about perspective and about how people see their side of the story. One of the really interesting things is we see Thomas Wayne in this movie. This is Bruce Wayne's father. And in previous movies, he's been portrayed as this, you know, this very wise, almost sage-like figure. I look at his portrayal in Batman Begins, and he's just this upright man who's using his wealth and knowledge and everything like that to benefit other people. He's trying to pull the city out of poverty. He's one of the reasons Gotham limps on, as Ra's al Ghul puts it in the Batman Begins movie. And we see a very different Thomas Wayne in this Joker movie. He's sort of a Trump-like figure. I think there was some intentional references or framing him like that in this movie. Everyone wants him to run for mayor, and he's sort of the wealthiest person in Gotham, and people feel like he can kind of fix their problems. But he, you know, goes on TV and describes people as lazy and clowns, and if they just worked harder and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. And then he has some interactions with Arthur, and they're very negative, and he's just a really cold and insensitive jerk. And so he's never been portrayed like that in a movie before, and that scene left me thinking, you know, was he really like that, or is that just how Arthur is seeing it to justify his actions? And that's basically the movie in a nutshell, is are these things really happening, or is this how he's seeing them?
Yeah. So I guess this is where I would interject.
Yeah.
That really I was sensitive to is the mental health part.
Yeah.
Mental illness part. You see him almost doing a nosedive further and further into these mental health issues, his frame of mind, you know, as the movie moves along. So for me, that was quite powerful. And I think maybe that is why I feel so uncomfortable, because we got a glimpse, a very, very fine glimpse into maybe how the mind of someone that has mental illness is working.
Mm-hmm.
In one part of the film, he stops taking all his medication.
Yeah.
So from that point on, anything could be real or not, kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and he has a condition where he has uncontrollable laughter. I will say Joaquin Phoenix obviously gives a great performance in this movie, and the way his laughter is so unsettling, and it's almost like it's this sort of sad clown thing where when he's laughing uncontrollably, especially on that subway scene, almost like he's trying not to cry or he's afraid while he's laughing, and he has these different this painful expression across his face when he's laughing. And so, you know, understandably, people are creeped out by him. And he has a little card that he gives people that says, you know, I have this condition. But later on in the movie, we see questions about, is that real? Or is that something he just does? Some cops question him about that. And at one point, his mom questions him about that, where I was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, is this a real condition, you know? And also, he seems to sort of gain control of it by the end of the movie. But that might be part of his transformation, you know, sort of taking control of his life.
Right. We've kind of talked a little bit about cinematic art of the movie. Like, it's very, very well done. I think that's a huge piece to it, in the sense that I think when you talk about narrative art, you are going to bring all that stuff into it, right? So, I mean, for myself, it was very, very well done.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece to it is just the cultural piece. How is that woven into, you know, a movie things that we read, things that we, you know, kind of see, people bring their perspectives, right? And so this is, I think, portraying something. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, one thing about the setting of the movie is it's Gotham in the, I guess, in the 1970s, but it's very similar to New York in the 1970s and the 1980s, when some people might remember New York was a lot more dangerous. It was a city that was in decay. There was neighborhoods that you just didn't go into. And I think in recent years, New York's really turned it around. So a lot of people don't think about New York like that anymore. They think about Central Park and all that kind of stuff. But it's this very rough city, and there's the super rich and then there's the poor, and there's kind of a dynamic between them. And I think that's an issue that's obviously a lot of people think about and are talking about. You have these Democratic candidates like Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang, who this is a big talking point for them. And even in the Canadian election right now, this is a big talking point. One of the articles I read pointed out how they go watch, there's a scene where all the wealthy people in Gotham are watching this Charlie Chaplin movie. And I didn't know much about the movie, but it's a movie about a factory worker, you know, who's struggling in this factory. And it's kind of a, there's a social message in that movie, and it's juxtaposed by all these rich people in their tuxes laughing at the hardships of this factory worker. That's one of the scenes. But when I think about some of these social questions that maybe the movie could have asked, I don't really know what they are, because the rich aren't necessarily portrayed as bad and the poor as good in this movie. Everyone's sort of bad in this movie. So the poor are equally cruel to Arthur, I guess.
But would you agree that in the end he thought the rich were worse than anybody else, kind of thing?
Yeah. So there's a scene where he murders three wealthy bankers on a subway. And I think that was a pretext for a justification for his actions. They're wealthy bankers, people are suffering, and all that kind of stuff. But when he ends up on the Murray Franklin show at the end of the movie, he's sort of asked, you know, if he identifies with this movement, all that kind of stuff. He doesn't really seem to be interested in the politics at all. One of the huge themes of this movie was recognition. And there's a video I'll give a shout out to at the end that really pointed this out for me. And Arthur is a person who the world doesn't see. He makes this comment on the Murray Franklin show that, you know, everyone made such a big deal about these three bankers dying. But if it was me dead and lying in the streets, nobody would care. Everybody would just walk by. And there may be some truth to that statement about who society cares about and values and what we are willing to recognize. And so he's a person feeling unrecognized, and you can see that in the movie when he murders his first three people that he murders, these bankers, he becomes sort of notorious. People don't know it was him, but that this man dressed as a clown killed these bankers and all that kind of stuff. And you can see that he's intoxicated by this recognition that he's receiving, and he wants more of it and all this kind of stuff. And so one of the things that was pointed out in the movie was, or sorry, in one of the videos that I watched analyzing the movie, was that he's not so much concerned with the politics and social change and all that kind of stuff as he is recognition. And I think he's willing to use whatever excuse is necessary to get that recognition. And in some ways that was kind of interesting, but I think that if you're looking for some sort of social commentary here about rich and poor and a message about that, I didn't really see it in the film.
Hmm. I mean, I guess you can see that because as the film goes on, or at the beginning of the film, you see how bad he was treated by others around him, right? Starting off with the kids on the street that steal his sign, he goes running after them, and they basically beat him up. That's kind of the start in the movie itself about what has been happening in his life or going to happen in his life. And as time went on, it just got worse and worse. So to be recognized at the end of the film more and more, it did, I think, made him feel good, like you said. But you can see how it developed and how he probably felt even before that kind of time as well, right?
One of the things I think that was interesting about this movie too is there's a garbage strike happening in Gotham City. And so there's piles of garbage everywhere. And as the movie goes on, garbage keeps piling up. And I think there's sort of an allusion there to how the city is decaying and how a lot of the regular citizens are sort of paying the price for this garbage strike and that the politicians can't get it together, you know, and maybe he feels like garbage in some ways, like piled up on the side of the street and all this kind of stuff. One of the things I thought was interesting is that he gets attacked twice. The two times that he gets attacked, by random strangers. He's wearing his clown makeup and his clown outfit. And so I don't know if that's trying to say that there's a dehumanizing aspect there when you're looking at a person not as a real human being. He's just an anonymous clown. And at the end of the movie, he's a famous clown. And he sort of reworked that identity to get fame and notoriety. At the end of the film, he murders the talk show host, Murray Franklin, on his show. There's a riot going on outside and all this kind of stuff. And he gets arrested and all that kind of stuff, but then gets freed from this riot. And it's like everybody in the riot is sort of praising him and he's become the symbol and all that kind of stuff. But I think one of the things, too, is the rioters don't seem to have any clear goals or motivations. They're just looting and rioting, and they're just sort of frustrated and all that kind of stuff. So there's no real message. They're just angry and frustrated. And that's one of the messages of this movie. It's about a man who just becomes angry and frustrated and lashes out, and he doesn't really have any clear goals. I think one of the reasons I was frustrated with the movie was because I found that Heath Ledger's Joker in Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight movie was so fascinating because he brought up these big philosophical questions, and his goal was to demonstrate the facade that society creates around their morality. He's trying to demonstrate that people are evil and that they will turn on each other if given the chance or if put in the right situation, and he sort of wins that argument. And Batman has to cover up the truth and all that kind of stuff, and that sets up the third movie. Joker in that movie is portrayed as sort of a mastermind. I mean, he's this genius that is always one step ahead of everybody else, even though he seems like a madman. And he has the temperament of a child in the terms of emotionally unstable and rage-filled and all this kind of stuff, but he's a sort of mastermind and genius. But Joaquin Phoenix's Joker is basically a child. He's not one step ahead. He's not some genius mastermind. He's just lashing out at the world around him. He's angry. There's no real plan. And I didn't find that particularly interesting, like I found Heath Ledger's Joker.
See, I found that interesting.
Yeah.
I really did. Just coming from the mental health aspect again, but then the aspect of putting ourselves in the empathy piece. You know, I don't think it was deep philosophically, like you were saying, but that empathy piece, I think different shows show different things. And what you were looking for was not there, for
yeah.
sure. And what I was have been sensitive to in the last number of years, I think, really shone through.
Yeah.
So you're going to get these different, you know, movies that come out that highlight different things. And for me, it really did highlight those two things. Everyday interactions with other people. How do we interact? How do we make an impact on others in a positive way,
mm-hmm.
right? But that just doesn't happen all the time.
So I guess a question maybe I would have for you on the mental health front is, what do you think this movie says about mental health? Because it does address mental health, but I'm concerned that it does it in a way that's maybe not helpful to the conversation. My take was that it creates more of the fear and stigma around mental health in terms of, you know, this guy goes off his medications and starts murdering people. I'm worried about that kind of conversation because society's trying to turn the conversation around on mental health. And I don't know if this movie helps, but it'd be interesting to hear your take on that.
Yeah, I'm just going to read one quote from Tom Phillips, who is the director of the film. He says this: "The movie makes statements about the lack of love, childhood trauma, lack of compassion in the world, and I think people can handle that message." And I think that's what I came away with. Mm-hmm. The article that I got this from, the guy was just like, "I don't think I really believe him," kind of thing, right? And speaking to the mental health piece, yes, I think there's some – well, first of all, for the whole movie itself, I think 3/4 of the movie at least was addressing mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this 25% where it's more violent and chaotic and kind of a switch in his mind.
Yeah. I think, too, one of the things this movie addresses, and I resonate with this, is that the government sort of has this program in place to help Arthur, and it eventually gets funding cut and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't seem like it's really doing the job. And I think a lot of people put the burden of mental health care on the government, and want the government to do to us. That's a huge conversation in the Canadian election right now. But there's something sort of cold and systematic about the government, even when they're trying to do something good like that, that doesn't replace the human contact that we need and the love that we need. And so I think that's one of the things that stuck out about this movie. There's just, his life is just so horrible and there's just nobody that's there for him.
Totally, 100%. Like, yeah. That interaction, I mean, first of all, you know, working within the mental health kind of area within the last little while with different people, you have to be an advocate because the government is not always there, mm-hmm. right? And the other thing is there is just being present with them, you know? Mm-hmm. Many people that have these mental health, people are a little bit, there's a stigma. They want to stand back, standoffish from people that are struggling this way. They don't fully understand it. We just had a podcast about this a couple of weeks ago. It is a tough area to deal with. And I understand the advocacy that you have to do for those loved ones that have mental health issues. I fully understand that. You have to be on top of it all the time to get that care that you need for them.
One thing that I would say that sort of intersects with this film, that's a cultural conversation that's happening right now. I think, you know, in the 80s and 90s, we got into this behaviorism sort of psychology. You know, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but, you know, this idea that people are products of their environment. And, you know, a huge challenge to the gospel in the sense of people only do things that are wrong because the system around them is wrong. There's a guy that wrote a book, I can't remember what it's called, but he is a famous TED Talk. He was the guy that led the experiment, the Stanford Prison Experiment. And he has this kind of saying, like, there's no bad apples, there's just bad barrels. If we change the system, people will be good. Now that we're in the time of mass shootings and these kind of things, people are really struggling with that message because they don't want to believe that the people who carry out a mass shooting or a murder are not responsible for their actions. Because this sort of psychology says that because bad things happen to these people, that's why they're out doing these mass shootings. And so it's not really their fault. It's the system's fault. And I think as Christians, we don't believe that. We believe that people are responsible for their own actions and will be held accountable for their own actions. And so in some ways, I'm sort of embracing that cultural conversation and saying, you know, I think you guys are onto something by saying there needs to be a personal responsibility. One of the fears I think of this movie is that people who are isolated and alone are going to watch this movie and think, well, that's the right way to react, to get recognized and to get attention is to lash out and be violent and all this kind of thing. And so one of the conversations around this movie was that this movie is a dangerous movie. It's going to inspire other attackers and all that kind of stuff. Now, there's a lot that's already out there to inspire attackers. So I don't think this is going to make that big of an impact. But
I honestly thought there's more violent movies out there than this.
Oh, yeah,
one, right?
For sure. Well, and so one of the points that was made too was that somebody like, I think CNN was commenting, you know, this is a dangerous film because it shows attackers that they can get recognition. And somebody tweeted back at them, 30 seconds after a mass shooting, your news network has made that person the most famous person in the world. You know, you have broadcast their face, right, and their story and all that kind of stuff. You know, they know that if they carry out an attack, you are going to make them famous, like worldwide. And the movie sort of touches on that sense that the media is both horrified by violence but also loves to focus on it because it's good for ratings.
Yeah.
One of the videos that I watched a video by an organization called Wisecrack. This is on YouTube, and you can just type in Wisecrack Joker, and there's about a 12-minute video. And it talks about this movie called The Network, which is a 70s movie that came out about a news anchor who's having a mental breakdown. And the network realizes that it's so good for ratings that they keep putting this guy on TV. And he just goes on these crazy rants and all this kind of stuff, and everybody wants to watch it. And, you know, he's showing up in his pajamas and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's kind of a crazy movie. And there's some references to that movie in Joker in the sense of the media just can't take the cameras away when something horrifying happens. And in some ways, they bear the responsibility for encouraging these attackers and all that kind of stuff. Now, I think the media would respond by saying, well, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to not talk about mass shootings and all that kind of stuff? And I don't know all the answers to that question. I would just say that news organizations, CNN is not alone in this, have become obsessed with these kind of attacks, and they'll talk about them for weeks afterwards and in some ways almost seem to thrive on them.
Yeah.
You know, because it's good for their ratings. Yeah. And that's really disturbing.
I mean, I really think the movie itself gets really dark.
Mm-hmm.
But is it any darker than a lot of other anti-hero movies? And I would probably say no.
Yeah.
I really feel at this time in our culture, people are very, very sensitive to these occurrences that might happen. I mean, one of the theaters in Aurora, Colorado, I believe, didn't even show it.
Mm-hmm.
We're very sensitive to the gun violence right now.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why a lot of people want to go see it.
Yeah. Just a comment on Aurora, Colorado. So there was a shooting during a Batman movie in Aurora, Colorado. And some people have said that the shooter was inspired by the Joker or dressed like the Joker. But then I've heard differing takes on that, that that's not really true. But I think in fairness, that theater had good reason to be respectful and not show that movie. But yeah, I would say that the fear of mass shootings, of random attacks. Last time I was on here, we were talking about the van attack in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Just being attacked by a random stranger is very high right now. You know, it's hard to know if that's reality or if that's media hype. That's one of the things that's this movie maybe is asking that question of what's real, what can we know is real? I was going to say one of the cultural conversations around this movie, there's a lot of people that really, really like it. Some of them might just be DC fanboys and all that kind of stuff, but it seems like the right of the political spectrum really likes this movie. And sometimes it's hard to know if we're getting real reviews or critiques of this movie or that's being influenced by it. And, you know, obviously you can't give an unbiased review, but these movies are sort of becoming cultural banners for different groups and different movements. I look at a movie, Captain Marvel, another superhero movie that came out last spring. And I went and watched that movie, and in my opinion, it just wasn't good. It was felt lazy. It wasn't well done. You know, the special effects didn't look very good. And the plot and the story and all that kind of stuff just didn't really work. I just felt like it was a lazy, sort of bad movie. It wasn't like a terrible, awful movie, but it wasn't good. But it was bizarre. The movie got all of this praise and these accolades and all that kind of stuff. It made over $1 billion. And it was seen as sort of a feminist piece. And it was almost like if you don't like this movie, you hate women and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it felt like we couldn't have a real conversation about this movie and actually be critical about it because there was just two sides. There was people that hated it because it was, you know, social justice warrior propaganda. And then there was people that loved it because it was this sort of feminist masterpiece and all this kind of stuff. And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle, and that it wasn't a very good movie. And I think it's okay to say that, but it wasn't totally awful either. Now, it's funny. I'm in a Facebook group right now that talks about movies, and this Facebook group in particular hates Captain Marvel, and they hate Brie Larson, the actress, which I think, you know, is just really ridiculous because why are you going around hating actors and actresses? But they, you know, and so I posted that I didn't like the Joker, and I, you know, probably 30 comments of, you know, you're out of your mind and this is the greatest film. And, know, not really any nuanced, thoughtful comments or feedback, just a lot of personal attacks on me and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'll just say, I mean, I'm not trying to stereotype, but a lot of people in this group are young white males that really enjoyed the Joker and really hated Captain Marvel. And it's hard for people not to see these sort of stereotypes start to play out and these groups that feel like this is the movie for our group and we have to like it. It has to do well,
right. Has
to make money so they can make more of it. I would say both Captain Marvel and Joker are two movies I don't really have any plans to watch again. And, I think it's okay to not identify with these groups and to try and say, and I'm going to try and look at this film outside of that.
So as we close here, we need to wrap things up. We want to address it in a gospel way as well. Do we participate in this? Do we need to know about this in order to be effective in witness for our culture as well?
It's a good question, Terry. Here's what I would say. Joker portrayed a nihilism. That was what I came away from with the movie. There wasn't really any meaning or purpose. Humans are cruel and awful to each other. And, you know, asking why does it matter and why, you know, why be a cog in the system for rich people or other people to benefit off of you when they don't care about you? And you know, just, and so I think this movie does a good job of exposing sin in the world. And the gospel brings hope into the darkness of people's lives when they don't have meaning and when they feel insignificant. I mean, the fact that God wants a relationship with you. Arthur Fleck's a character who never had a real father and is abused by a lot of the men in his life and desires that relationship. And so for a lot of us who, for people who feel isolated and alone and without family, God is their father, you know? And I think that Jesus is willing to sacrifice for us. We see in this movie, Arthur's getting abused by people and he's putting himself out there and getting nothing back. And the truth of the gospel is that Jesus did that for us. Jesus took the abuse for us. And so I think there's something hopeful in that. And we don't have to embrace and live in this nihilism. And not only that, but our lives have a purpose and meaning. Arthur kind of wants to be a part of a movement, but doesn't seem to really care about the movement. But you can tell a lot of people in the movie want to be in a movement. And in the political conversations that we're having right now, you know, around climate change and around social justice and all this kind of stuff, people want to be a part of a movement, something that means something. Following Jesus is being part of that movement and that opportunity to build his kingdom. And so I would just encourage anybody listening, you know, if that kind of stuff's weighing you down right now, I would just say for myself, just going back to the scripture, learning about who Jesus was and how he treated people and all that kind of stuff, it picks me up from the depths when I'm thinking like that and I'm getting, you know, when I've watched too much news and just feel like it just seems really bleak.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's a good place to end on. John? Appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks for having
me. Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah.
And
can I throw out just, I would just say, if you've watched this movie and you're asking a lot of questions, two resources. One would be the Wisecrack video. They do a 12-minute video on the Joker.
Okay.
And they talk about recognition. And then I would recommend, it's called Wolf Den, W-U-L-F-F. And this guy made a video called The Joker Is Not That Deep. Which he's, I feel like is a fair take, but you can go on to Google and there are articles and articles written about this movie. So I would encourage you to take some time to unpack it and think about it. And
way too many. Oh my word. There is.
Read the analysis. And
exactly. In Wikipedia.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more things to think about.